This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on point and Anna Knox. Here's Wilson, and on the right side, and he scores!
Welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point. And, well, what can I say? Just coming off that game, I'm sure, well, as you're listening, this it's live to tape, but as we're taping this, it's about it's 20 after 5. We just finished up watching the Vancouver game and up and down week for the Caps on ice. So we'll get into that. I have the pleasure of being graced by not one but two co-hosts this week. Of course, Anna's still on a winter holiday break. First, of course, I have the pleasure of introducing back for another week the seamstress for the band, my lovely wife Jenny, Mrs. Blue.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
And that voice you heard right after was our second co-host, new to the show, but not new to our group, a longtime listener and longtime hockey fan and Caps fan. He is the Dutch treat, Willem Bagus. Willem, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. It's a wonderful day, and it's always a good day to watch Caps hockey.
That it is, even when they lose, at least when Ovechkin scores as he did.
I love it. I absolutely love watching Ovechkin score, and that's my thrill this season is seeing him knocking down one milestone after another. It's just wonderful. What a treat to watch such a talented player.
Yeah, it's said a lot, but we really are lucky to have a front row seat to that, to bear witness to that. Caps have never really had. Well, they've had a lot of talented players over the years, but never a generational talent like Alex Ovechkin. So we really are extremely fortunate for that. So before we go on, of course, Willem, this is your first time on the show. So as I always do, we have some get-to-know-you questions, starting with, how did you get started as a Washington Capitals fan?
I moved to D.C., in 2010, I grew up in Montreal. I watched the Montreal Canadiens win 10 of their Stanley Cups firsthand. And I saw the goal that Bobby Orr scored in 1970, so that's how old I am. And when I moved here in 2010, I started paying attention to the Caps a little bit. But it became – the Caps are a very easy team to love. Whenever I went to back then, it was the Verizon Center, people were so welcoming. They open arms and they embraced everybody, welcome, cheer along with us, which is a different experience than I've had in other arenas. And then you see the different things the Caps do. They're very accessible to the fans. Going to Kettler, it was very easy to, you know, to see the players and the things they do in the community. It didn't take long before I totally fell in love with the team and with, you know, my neighbors and everything. And I had to cheer the Caps on, and now they're far and away my favorite team.
That's really awesome. And of course, getting your start, well, probably no better learning ground than La Belle Provence, especially Montreal.
Yep.
The easily the most dominant hockey franchise there ever has been. But you said you started in 2010. That must have been confusing or maybe even bittersweet, because I believe they actually met in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Had that epic 7-game series.
I remember that series firsthand, and it was just as I was moving down, before it was all over and everything, and, you know, people in Montreal really didn't pay too much attention to what was going on in D.C., so for us, it was always memories of what we used to call the lowly caps. You know, there's no disrespect intended there, but everybody's got their head stuck in 1974, right? And
right.
So, you know, figure, oh, great. We don't have to battle Boston or anything like that. You know, this should be an easy win. And, you know, the Habs really didn't have much business being in the playoffs in the first place, but, you know, whatever. And so it was Washington. And we had no idea what was going on down here in D.C. Since then, I've actually reviewed that entire series from the Caps perspective. We're sitting there and we're watching this miracle play out. And finally, we got through and we beat them in seven games. And I'm saying this from a Montreal standpoint. Then I move here. And one of my passions is karaoke, you know, for better or for worse, but I love singing. There's a place out here, I mean, I live in Northern Virginia. There's a place out here, it used to be called Sully's, where I used to sing karaoke. I mean, there's Caps, memorabilia everywhere. And it's one of those funny lack of self-awareness things on my part. Coming down and, you know, yay, Habs this and Habs that. And the host looks at me and says, you do realize where you're standing right now. Not realizing how bitter this was for, you know, for the hockey fans here in D.C. because they had a lot of really realistic and reasonable expectations of winning that series. And, you know, since then, that host and I have become very close friends. And then as I started to follow the Caps a lot more closely, then I went back to that series and said, oh, I get it now. And so, yeah, at the time I was looking at everything from a Montreal lens. And, you know, naturally, Habs haven't won anything since 1993. And actually, I was there in 93. I lived less than a mile from the Forum when they beat the Kings.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah. That was a pretty exciting time. But, and I have so many stories of that. But, you know, Montrealers, in particularly my generation, typically live in yesterday. Everything is just because you wear the crest means somehow you're entitled to win everything. The only prejudices I carry with me in the field of hockey is I cannot, in good conscience, say anything nice about Toronto, no matter what. That's a Montrealer.
It's kind of expected.
And of course, in D.C., I've kind of learned a similar distaste for the Penguins. The city of Pittsburgh itself, I kind of have a great fondness for, and this comes from my travel talk show, but. As far as the team is concerned, every time the Caps and the Pens meet, I'm definitely going, yeah, the one team we just cannot lose to.
Right.
And we do sometimes at the most inopportune times. Toronto is, you know, as I like to say, the epicenter of everything that's evil and wrong in the world. But that's just, you have to say that when you're from Montreal. You cannot say anything nice about Toronto. So anyway, that's just me and my little prejudices. And it's all said tongue-in-cheek, obviously, because you know, in the NHL, one of the things I like about hockey in particular is that most of the players tend to be really decent people. You know, I mean, there are exceptions, obviously, but most of the players are really good guys. And in this era of the league, which it seems every year they throw all the players in the Scrabble bag and everybody tosses out tiles, okay, you're on this team, it's a lot less about the crest you wear, and you start following really talented hockey players, and you get an appreciation and a respect for them, regardless of what jersey they wear. I mean, for instance, Alex Chiasson, who was on our cup-winning team in 2018, he was on the Canucks today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you still, I got to have a lot of respect for the guy, and even different players throughout the league. So I can't dislike a player just because of the jersey they wear these days. So I'm more of a hockey fan because I love the sport. Even this old man on skates, you know, soon back on skates. I've got my little Caps outfit of my own. I go to Haymarket and I start shooting the puck around just for fun. But
nice.
That's my number 66, right?
Yeah.
not because of Lemieux. It's the year I was born. So yeah.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's why. Yeah.
I was just going to say that everything you just said is why we're not just Caps fans here at the podcast, but we're hockey fans in general. And it's so true what you said about hockey players are so, for the most part, they're very approachable. They're inviting. They're, you know, easy to talk to, and you know, they're just good people all around. And that's, you see it, and we talk about it a lot in the community. Yeah. They're active in the community, and that's one of the many reasons why, you know, it's not just on the ice, it's off the ice, that why we're yes. proud to be part of this community and proud to be fans of the team, is because they're not only great players, they're good people. They're great people, yeah. too. So
that's one of the reasons I love TJ Oshie so much. I'm telling you, if there ever was a human being out there that every single time I see the guy, I hear him talk, I hear him do something, I'm saying, dude, is it possible for me to fall in love with you anymore? You know what I mean? I mean, well, seriously, he does decent things for people. I don't think he's done anything that I could possibly fault, you know?
Yeah, well, with me, it's the fact that he loves donuts. So that's probably my number one. Okay, so... yeah, well, obviously, I mean, more than obviously, you've got hockey chops, so I can't wait to hear your opinions on how the Caps have been doing as we go over the games.
Yeah.
So a little bit more about you personally, real quick, before we get to the hockey action. Of course, another question I like to ask. You don't have to get into this too much if it's too personal, but what exactly do you do for the almighty paycheck?
Oh, I'm a computer guy.
Oh, jeez. Jenny, Mrs.
You
B.
have a talent for picking yes. these people, yes.
Yes, I have a type. I know, obviously. There's Blake Allen, who does coding. There's Brad Silvestro, who does IT, and there's Doug, who does the same thing I do, works yeah. IT for a financial company. So yeah, apparently I have a type. So that's outstanding. So.
Well, there's many computer types out there. There's the kind who are happier, you know, in front of the screen, either coding or you know, setting things up. And there's other people. I'm a bit more gregarious. I ran my own business in Montreal for about 25 years. And, you know, when you're in that position, as technical as you might want to be, because I wanted to build robots when I was a kid, you know, as technical as I want to be, I learned to love people. And, you know, you don't hear it often. You hear all the opposite. Oh, I hate people and blah, blah, blah. I know I love people. I've grown to love them so much with the travel show that I did as a hobby, as well as the people I would meet through the business that I had. Then later on, I was a sales engineer for a software company, and they sent me all over Canada, the USA, and South America, about 140 flight sectors a year for 4 years. And the people I met along the way are what I remember the most about all those years. And some are my friends to this day. And because of that, I got to be known by different companies. In 2010, in fact, I had 9 job offers, and I actually picked the one that I have here. And my specialty is actually in messaging and communications. So it's computer stuff, obviously. But it's more people-oriented. And in this position, you talk to everybody in the organization. So it suits me really well, this particular job. And so that's what I do for a living. It's computer Fantastic. Stuff, but people-oriented.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Couldn't be better. Couldn't ask for more. So, yeah, it all fantastic to hear. Great getting to know you, Willem. You know, we've been messaging back and forth for probably the better part of a year or two, but great to finally hear your voice and, you know, live sure. and, you know, and get your opinion. So, speaking of opinions, before we get to the recap of the 3 games past, I feel like I need to say something here because, there was an article written earlier in the week that addressed the so-called goalie situation.
Written
by Tarik El-Bashir in the Athletic. Yeah. And I respect Tarik very, very much. He actually used to be the beat writer for the Washington Post, and then he bounced around for a bit, decided he loved covering hockey more than anything else, so he ended up on the Athletic, got an offer from them. So now he's, you know, he covers the Caps and hockey in general for them. And he was the one that wrote the article, and basically he said, okay, we gotta lay it out. The tandem we have right now of Samsonov and Vanecek is not going to be enough to get the Caps through the playoffs. not very deep anyway. So here are about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 goalies who might be an option at the trade deadline. And Marc-Andre Fleury and Braden Holtby were two of them. And part of me wants to say, and again, I respect Tark El-Bashir very much for his work. Yeah. I think he's very knowledgeable, but part of me wants, can't help but think, was this article just written for kind of wishful thinking or shock value?
Clickbait.
Yeah. I hate to associate something like that with a Tark El-Bashir because he is very professional and very knowledgeable, but I can't help but think that article was written just for, hey, let's call attention and create a problem that isn't. Now, I will acknowledge, Samsonov and Vanacek have not been at their best 100% of the time, maybe not even 80% of the time during the games. And yes, they could be better, but that's just it. They can be better. They are the future. I still think it's a great problem to have with two young goalies that have potential, are good now, and can be better.
Hang on a second. We don't have two good goalies, two young good goalies. We've got four young good goalies.
Right, exactly. I mean, well, two on the roster right now, and two
right.
In
we've got two on the roster. We've got two at Hershey. We've got Shepherd down with the Stingrays when he's not up in Hershey. I mean, we've got five goalies in the works where I think his intention with the article was not necessarily saying that we have a problem, but we have these options that maybe we could upgrade to a more veteran goalie if they feel that that's something they need it at free agency or
the trade deadline.
Whatever. Trade deadline, so, I mean, there are options, but I don't think we necessarily need to have a veteran goalie. I mean, because we brought in Anderson last year, and what, he played, what, 6 or 7 games?
Mm-hmm. He was good, too.
Yeah, he was good, but we didn't need him all that much.
No, I agree with you, Jenny. 100% of what you're telling me, I mean, the five goalies that we have, I mean, I saw Zach Bukal, and he is so good, better than I ever thought he was. And then, you know, between Copley and Vanacek and Samsonov, I think we are drowning in goalies. So, and I have had this opinion since 2014 when all they were doing is goalie after goalie after goalie. And I'm thinking, guys, every goalie in the NHL today, everyone is a really good goalie from what I've been seeing. And there's 2 points I'd like to make. First of all, we've got great goalies all around. We have a lot of good goalies on our team, but it doesn't matter how good you are as a goalie. I think Ken Dryden would have a hard time if he was left standing out in the cold as often as we've been freezing out our goalies. Meanwhile, the other goalies, they're not busy. They could be doing their taxes for all the work that we give them. You know, what's the other goalie doing? You know, he's filing his tax return. Doesn't really need to be worried about shots on goal because the Caps are busy figure skating around him. You know, don't get me started on that. But as far as the goalies are concerned, first of all, we have such awesome goalies. And like Gil correctly pointed out, they're young. They are our future. Jenny said the same thing. But beyond that, any goalie, and we've proven this with Braden Holtby, any goalie, as good as they are, can be ruined with a lousy goalie coach. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that our goalie coach is bad, but you know, case in point, when Adam Motes was our head coach and he was trying to, you know, change the way the players play, I mean, Holtby was at his lowest of the low. I mean, there's one particular game up in Minnesota that he was at, and by his own words, that was rock bottom for him. It's like he was almost like a sieve to water when it came to pucks, yet he's the guy who brought us the cup. And even Holtby at his best, you know, with Mitch Korn, had bad games. So, you know, good goalies can have bad games too. But for what I've seen from Vanacek, Samsonov, and especially from Kali, I've seen some really fantastic and spectacular goaltending. What I've not seen is much in the way of offense. So, you know, we're spending so much time trying to tee up perfect play that it doesn't matter who you have. Anyway, I'm getting a little bit off track, but as far as goalies are concerned, I like Tarik El-Bashir. I've met him a few times, really decent, knowledgeable guy. I don't know why people write that, but, you know, there are some good people who have some bizarre opinions, and that's possible. There are people out there who seem to think that this is some red light emergency, and I'm thinking, no, we're out there and we're not scoring any goals. That's the problem. You know, it's like RoboCop, you know, when his aim was just a little bit off, and we're hitting post after post. So I think our goalie situation, we got good goalies, we got plenty of them, so let's just keep them. Problem is now, and we should be saving our trades for decent forwards and better power play. Now, one part of my heart says I'd love to see Holtby come back home too. You know, wouldn't that be nice, part two with Braden, because I love the guy. And if we bring in Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, between Sherry and Hagelin and all the other, and Schultz and all the other guys, are we bringing the Penguins here? You know, that's just a little nod to the musical chairs or the Scrabble tile approach. But, you know, and I like Fleury too. I mean, you know, he's a Montrealer, just as Fricali is a Montrealer. I was a goalie when I was a kid, so, I mean, I know how to play the position. But in the end, at the end of the day, I don't think we have a goalie situation. It's, you know, some guy talking about, yeah, you got to move out of your house, and thinking, why? I love my house. It's in perfect shape. I have different problems to worry about. And that's where I sit, in my opinion, on this. I think exactly as you did, Gil, it's a problem that isn't a problem. So I don't know what the purpose of that article was. It's kind of nice to toy with ideas, but I think we should be focusing our attention on where the problems actually are.
True enough. And I think, now that I think about it, I think that article was in part a knee-jerk reaction, if I can do a bit of a segue here, a knee-jerk reaction to the game that they had just played against the Boston Bruins earlier in the week. It was a Monday night game. Yeah. And we all saw it. It was yeah, absolutely awful. to watch. I was very, very tempted to turn it off halfway through the third period. I had just gone beyond angry. I was just despondent with how bad. You know, it's one thing when you lose to a team that's better. Obviously, the Bruins were better that night, but yeah, it's another thing entirely when it doesn't seem like you're into the game, and that's, I don't know. It just, after the first period, yeah, something happened, and that it just, all the energy, all the focus just left. So we're going to do a very, very quick recap. No need to go over every single goal. Yeah. Connor Sheary got the Caps 2 goals ahead by 12 and a half minutes, his 9th and 10th of the year. And then, the beginning of the end was when not long after he got that his second goal was when they started taking all those penalties, and I think that threw them off their rhythm. They lost focus. You got your penalty killing units out there, which prevents you from putting your big guns out there.
Yeah.
So, and it's just, and then you give a chance to guys like Pastrnak and Marchand, and they, you know, if you give them a chance, yes, these are guys with talent. Yeah. They're going to score. And they, next thing you know, the game's tied. We're heading into the second period. And then, like I said, I would love to know what happened in that intermission, because they just came out flat. And Grieslick scores his second. I love Zach Fucali, but I think this one he wanted to have back. If you look at the replay, it was your classic – under the arm, under armor goal. And if he had positioned himself maybe a smidge better, just kind of kept his arms closer, he would have had it instead of missing it. And Yeah, I feel bad for him because right after this game, they sent him back. They didn't even put him in on the taxi squad. They sent him right back to Hershey. And
yeah,
that's
I feel
really
bad for the guy too.
Yeah, I wish they hadn't have done that because that makes it feel like I don't think that was the intent, but they make that kind of makes him out to be the scapegoat. And he had some goals that, you know, he wasn't at his best, but I don't think the game was all his fault. The loss was all his fault.
No, I don't think the game was all his fault either, because we weren't playing in position. We weren't where we needed to be to help keep some of those shots from being made.
Well, we stopped playing is what it is. And let's also be honest. I remember, first of all, I think you're onto something, Gil, when you say something happened during the intermission that changed things. We don't know what goes on in the locker room, but something happened, and I'm with you on that one. But also, I think Anna mentioned in one of her posts that she expresses regular frustration at Brad Marchand, and I hear it from my Montreal friends, too. They don't like the guy, and I'm thinking, well, imagine him on our team, the kind of difference he would make. And I'm thinking, you'd probably like the guy then. So in other words, he's working and doing exactly what he is supposed to. It's not nice when he's doing it against our team, but he's a pretty darn good player. And
no denying that.
When you're facing guys like, I mean, Pastrnak, I love Pastrnak, really. And it's too bad he's on the other team, because between Pastrnak, Bergeron, and Marchand, you give these guys just a little bit of space. Mm-hmm. And they are going to wipe the floor with you. And they did. And to be fair, it wasn't just the Caps being bad. The Bruins are on a high right now, because I watched the very next game they played against the Canadiens. And lo and behold, what happened? You know, it wasn't as bad as against us, but yeah, Marchand wiped the floor of the Habs. So, I mean, you've got a bunch of players who are on a high. And I will also say confidence has a lot to do with it. The Caps have been in a bit of a slump. This particular part of the season, although at the early part of the season they went pretty well. But when you also factor in the fact that half of our players are out at any given time due to this crazy, you know, pandemic that we're in, it's hard to really fault the guys, except for, you know, there are certain things they consistently do badly that I wish that they would fix. Now, you know, like Jenny pointed out, you pointed out, it's like they just stopped playing. You know, there was a game in 2018, I recall, that season against Buffalo. And by all accounts, the Caps should have won that game. And Buffalo wiped the floor with us. And I'm looking at it going, wait a minute, this team, which was on a high, we go to what was one of the lowly teams. And it's like, did the Caps all go to the casino and dress up a bunch of imposters as themselves? Because it really seemed that different from their usual character. Much the same way, the second and third periods of that game, to me, is, guys, why did you just stop? Like, they'll score a couple goals, and then they'll hit a couple posts, and then suddenly they'll stop trying. It's like, why are you stopping to try? You take one shot, and then you're backing out way into your own zone. They do this also in overtime, too, where they got the three guys, and then I see the guy skating backwards and further back. Guy, you're skating the wrong way, dude. Get into the zone and keep the puck there. So that's just my pet peeves when I'm watching them.
And to build on that, Willem, I think you're getting to something that should be obvious to more of us. They're not playing to when they do that. When they do those things that you just described, they're not playing to win. They're playing not to lose. And
that's
an attitude they really need to drop now, because. Yeah. You cannot go into the playoffs thinking that, because if you
you're not going to get anywhere. I mean, you have the same thing that happened to us in 2019. I mean, the floor was, remember when we were playing against it was 2018, 2019, and we're in game seven. First of all, that it went seven games against the Hurricanes in the first place, but in that last game, and it was, Brock again who scores that goal, and I'm going, never been in that position in the first place.
No,
you know,
should
it was
not.
A good team, but we
should not have.
Yeah. So the same thing, but then again, I mean, and we can go down this road many, many shows of it, is the power play. Oh my goodness, this power play. Why is it that when we have the power play, suddenly we slow down? What's up with that? We're a fast skating team.
Yeah.
So we're slowing down.
I'm so with you there. And this game was yet another chapter that everybody's left standing around scratching their heads. They had two chances, and they were 0-for-2 there. And they did more of the same thing and the same pattern. Everybody standing around playing, you know, patty cake with the puck, no action, no movement. And it had just gotten predictable and to the point.
Well, I've expressed my opinion on the power play on other episodes that they need to mix it up and stop looking for that perfect shot.
Right. And that's probably the number one problem with that right now. Everybody's looking for that perfect play when it's not an ideal power play is not that. It is you have a plus one. You have a man advantage. Use it to your advantage. Put that extra guy in front of the goalie so he can't see.
Among other things, yes. But that's the other thing, and it's been mentioned by Jenny, it's been mentioned by you, me, and a bunch of other people, that whatever power play advantage that we had with whatever system we conjured up 15 years ago, the league has learned to defend against it. You can't use – I mean, sometimes it'll still work. You know, it's Backe to Ovi in his office, and bang, it'll go in good. But you got to do other things, so you can't just always try to tee that thing up. And when you've got another player out there, why are you slowing down and wasting your time and going, okay, nice and easy. Okay, pass me the puck slowly. I mean, the other team's got skates and sticks too. And they're aggressively trying to grab it away. You know, so you can't just do that. As far as my particular point of view is, first of all, guys on the point, the keep in, we're not keeping it in the zone. The one thing you must do is keep it in the zone. Second thing is just shoot. Shoot from all angles and jump on rebounds. Because you got that extra player, you should be able to tire them out no end. And if you stay in their zone, you're going to tire them out no end. You can keep changing players on the fly, you know, because you got that extra player. And I think that's what they ought to be looking at. I mean, everything Jenny said is exactly right. Mix it up. Don't always throw the same thing at them. Have three or four, you know, go-to plays. Every now and then you'll surprise them by going back to that to Ovi in his office. But Ovi, being the best goal scorer of our time, I believe firmly in my heart, can score from anywhere. But you got to give him the chance to do it. And he's being very generous this year. He's passing the puck way more than I've ever seen him do because he's being generous with other players to score. But for crying out loud, dude, you are the best goal scorer that we've ever seen. Shoot the puck, please.
So the whole team needs to shoot the puck.
And for some reason they're just when they have the man advantage they're just too afraid to. And
exactly because if they shoot the puck they're afraid the other team's going to get it. Well, the other team's going to get it if you stand around. Plus this whole slowing down business. You know, if you're slowing down, then the other team you're pretty much compensated for their being shorthanded in the first place. The whole idea of having an extra player out there is so that, okay, now let's turn up the juice a little bit because we got another guy to pick up the slack, you know, to pick up pucks or whatever. But let's skate like bumblebees around these people. This is how the Penguins had their two cups in a row in their great years. This is Mike Sullivan's approach. If, you know, heaven forbid, the Penguins got the set up in our zone on their power play in those years, it was almost certainly going to go in the net, no matter how good we defended. So, you know, we stay in their zone, jump on, jump on rebounds, shoot, and shoot more, keep it in the zone, and for the love of all things good and plenty and other licorice candy, ditch that idiotic slingshot. All
yes.
It does is
yes. Amen, brother. Amen, brother. I am with you.
I think everybody's in agreement with that one.
I think that a lot of people love the slingshot. They say, oh, what a great play. I think, in the first opinion, I think that there's some consultant goes around from team to team, and he says, you know what? I've got this new play I've come up with. You sign a contract. You've got to use this thing X amount of time. And, you know, and I get a royalty every time. That's the only reason that I can see doing this. You know, it, I mean, it works in radio, radio consultants, and they do idiotic things on the air, you know, make your station sound unique by doing the same thing thousands of other people do. Yeah, that's unique, all right. It's like a four-letter Valentine, you know, dear fill in the blank, you are the only one for me. But honestly, the slingshot, it just knocks. First of all, when you see John Carlson do it, he skates up and then just leisurely turns around and slowly passes the puck back to whomever might be there. And then, so you've got, what, 4 or 5 seconds knocked off your power play right there? And then on top of that, you just still got to bring the puck the other way. This is not going to give you zone entries any better than when you just flat out skate across the blue line with it. So, you know, whether you're going to dump and chase, which, you know, I used to really not like too much, but at least bring the puck in there and keep it
right
in there.
At least with the dump and chase, it's over the blue line and we can get to it and we can do something with it versus it being in the other zone.
Exactly right. Yeah. Beyond that, when you are that lazy with your passes, you know, that back pass, first of all, back passes drive me bananas. You know, you got all this momentum, you're going forward, you're moving, and suddenly, why did you pass to the guy who's like 20 feet behind you? Why? You know, and that gives perfect. Remember 2015, the playoffs, game 7, when we were against the Rangers, and Curtis Glencross makes this leisurely pass across Madison Square Garden. I mean, it could have been a nice crisp pass. Yeah, I remember that pass. It could have been a nice crisp pass, and it would have made it destination, but it was leisurely. Well, lo and behold, the Rangers got skates and sticks, and one guy decided he was going to skate. He didn't even have to skate all that hard, picked up the puck, you know, and used it against us. So much the same way, that slingshot is just an invitation for an interception and a shorthanded goal. I mean, I just cringe every time I see it. And I still think that some consultant is making money every time they do one, you know, like it just – I'm just making personal opinion. I have no earthly idea how it works or why they would do that. Much the same way, when a coaching staff changes, now Lane Lambert, I love the guy. I met the guy, had a chance to hear him talk, and I'm thinking, even with all the years of hockey knowledge that I've ever amassed, this guy in 15 minutes taught me more than all my years of experience. I love listening to the guy because he's really down to earth and sensible, at least the way I hear him. And we need more coaches like that. But when you change coaching staff, he went with Barry Trotz. Why is Blaine Forsythe still on the Caps? I don't know the man. I don't know the man at all. Met his wife at one of those Hockey and Heels events, which was really nice. What a sweet lady. But the guy is not doing anything for us on the power play every time he's in charge. And why is it that we always seem to wait until 1 minute and 40 seconds left before we actually start trying, like pulling the goalie and stuff? And if we have a lousy power play, what makes us think that having an empty net and an extra guy is going to make any extra difference? Again, personal opinion here.
Well, to be fair, I do notice that when they do empty the net and it's 6-on-5, they tend to play with a lot more urgency. Now, that's not to say that brings better results, but I can't come up with an explanation as to why, other than oh Lord, there's 2 minutes left in the game, we're losing, we need one.
Yeah,
and they finally
absolutely.
The light bulb finally goes on and they realize
that. Yeah, well, they need to have that light bulb on the entire 60 minutes of the game, not the last 2 minutes of the game or the period.
Amen, well, Jenny. Amen.
Well, you are not saying anything that you and I and others have not already
I
said.
I know, it's all been discussed before.
A gazillion times.
Don't get 60 minutes of effort.
Right, and it was no different in the game we just saw. Well, yeah. I'm not sure about that, but it wasn't the right kind of effort. I'll put it that way. We'll get to that in a second. But moving on to the middle game in the three.
Yeah.
Much better result and effort for that matter. The road game, the one road game in the new UBS Center against the Islanders.
Yeah.
2-0 win against Barry Trotz was in COVID protocol. So Lambert was actually running the bench, but the credit officially goes to Trotz. For the loss or win, but Lambert was running the bench because of COVID protocols. Right. So good to see him again. And I agree with you. I think he's one of the most he's probably one of the most more underrated reasons why the Caps won the Cup in 2018. Because of his coaching and his scheme with the forwards and how he organized them and taught them how to play a more organized and defensive oriented system. And
yes. The defense was a bit of a suggestion when Trotz came to town.
Mythological Beast was more like it, but
agreed.
Neither here nor there. In any case, much better overall effort. And this of course was the first game since the article and the blowout game. And now the goalies, now the team has to answer for something. Now that mainstream media has put the challenge out there, and they responded. Tom Wilson, to just briefly go over the scoring. Tom Wilson joins the double digit club, 435 in the first, with a beautiful wrister from the high slot. Found its way in the 7 hole. I really, really wish, I've been saying this forever, I really, really wish that they would organize plays more where he takes advantage of his size in front of the net, and he does have the hands, and not just for fighting, he has hands enough to move the puck into very targeted areas of the goal. He can do that. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see more of him in front of the net with more close-in chances or in the slot doing things like he did in this game. Because if you give him that chance, I think he would probably be good for at least at a minimum 30 goals a year if you give him the chance.
I think so. I'm so totally on that same page with you. And when you mentioned Tom Wilson, there is yet another player who I've learned to absolutely love. Growing up in Montreal, one of the best loved Canadians of all time in Montreal is a fellow named Chris Nyland. And I liken Tom Wilson to Chris Nyland insofar as when they both came on board, they were more the tough guys. They were the enforcer. And there came a point where even as much as the enforcer that Chris Nyland was, somewhere in the late 80s, I think it was somewhere around 89, 90, thereabouts, suddenly Nyland was back on the Habs because he'd been moved around a bit. But he was playing. And he was scoring goals. And my buddy and I look at each other, since when does Chris Nyland play hockey? Because he's usually the guy dropping the mitt. But much the same way, Tom Wilson is our fabled tough guy. But there was a point past which between two seasons, I think it was 2016-17 or 2015-16, one of those times where in an interview he said, no, I'm not going to go home this summer. I'm going to spend the summer here in D.C. and completely work out and buff up my body and increases, and lo and behold, did he ever transform, and this guy became a scoring machine. So yeah, very deservedly, first line, winger, and what a guy. Oh my goodness. So yes, you are right. This guy's got skills. He can put the puck anywhere he wants, but he's also tough enough. And that's the other thing I like about Ovechkin. He also does have the toughness it takes to defend people off. When Gretzky was scoring his goals, he had Dave Semenko looking out for him. So, he had people who were defending him the entire time. And people thought, watch Gretzky get into a scrap. He almost never did. But our guys are all big, tough guys who can put the puck in the net, which is really, really fantastic. We should be taking much more advantage of that. One of Gretzky's tactics that he used in the 80s all the time, and I don't know why we're not doing it, is to park behind the net. Remember that? Everything was behind the net.
His office behind the net. Yeah, that we call the left circle Ovechkin's office. Back in the day, behind the net was Gretzky's office. I know exactly what you're talking about. And yeah, you're right. And it's actually back in his day, there was a lot less room. And there's more room. They actually increased the space. So yeah, you're right. I don't know why they don't make more of that, but you're more out of the box type of players like a Kuznetsov actually they do utilize that kind of maneuverability around the yep. net. But you're right. You just don't see too many others doing that.
Right.
Anymore.
Well, you remember Cousy, I think it was 2015 against the Islanders before we went to the Rangers for the second round. And, Cousy was his first season with us in game 7. It was a real tight game. Towards the end, he started off from right to the left. I mean, from the goalie's vantage point of the goal, right along the goal line, skated towards the front and took this whacked out shot. Like he passed the net, turned around, and it was like in one fell swoop, took this net, and this shot went off the goalie's shoulder into the net to win us the game. And to hear him describe it, so I don't know, I skate a little bit, I do some stuff, and then I shoot it, and I go in the net. And I'm thinking, I love Cousy. Oh my goodness, do I love the guy. And thank goodness he got over whatever was ailing him in the last 2 years. I mean, I felt for the guy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, I mean, this year, it seems he's back, you know?
Yeah,
but
much like Tom Wilson, as you described, he recommitted to the game, and that's all he needed was to find his love for the game again, and you're seeing the results. So
that's a good phrase that you just used, the love of the game. One of my favorite TV commercials of all time, bar none, was a Geico commercial called Over Ice, and it was made for the Winter Classic, and you see Backstrom doing some little hockey maneuvers and noodling with a puck, and it said recipe for excitement, you know, puck, stick, ice, skates, and you know, the song in the background, I do it all for the love of the game. And if there was never any commercial or song I've ever seen that captures Backstrom quite so perfectly as he does it for the, because you see it in everything he does, it because he just loves this game and he loves this city. Like I told you, I fell in love with the Caps and seeing players with such passion for the game. And like you pointed out just a second ago, when the players are playing with their hearts, they're at their best. And that's what I like to see more. And you also see it, like, for instance, a little thing can happen during the game. Like you pointed out, the prior game, something happened between the first and second period. Suddenly, it's like the heart fell out of the team. And then following all this goalie business and people, you know, the Caps have a goalie crisis. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think so. And then lo and behold, they pull off this shutout, you know, against the Islanders. And I'm thinking, well, what goalie crisis? I mean, you know, it's we've got great goalies, but when we button down and we do a good job, especially against the kind of guys they got some amazing goal scorers, you know, Anders Lee and whatnot. You know, when you then cast that forward, what we're missing is putting the puck in the net and a sustained effort. What I'm not seeing is sustained effort at that. So in right now, what I'm saying is first of all, putting to rest our original topic, which the goalie crisis that is not, personal opinion, mind you. Secondly, you know, summaries of the games and what might have happened. I don't think the back-to-back is a problem. It just has to do with, I don't know, we're just not sustaining enough effort in the offensive zone. That's my thing. Put the puck in the net, you know, then it's a lot less likely that you're going to get goals against. But when you're constantly playing inside your own zone, after a while, the other team's going to put it in the net because they're taking shots at you.
True enough. And the stats for this game, of course, I have to mention that Ovechkin got his 25th of the year as an empty netter to ice the game. But the stats pretty much bear out exactly, the numbers bear out exactly what you said. 36 shots on goal for the Caps. Only 6 giveaways compared to 15 for the Islanders. You know, the possession numbers overall favored the Caps in this game, and it's a bit of a cliche, yes, but offense can be your best defense. If you are the one pressing the attack, then the other team isn't attacking you. So just like you said, as long as there's maximum effort in that direction, then you lessen the chances against you. And if the team is committed going the other way, which they were to the nth degree in this game, You saw what happened. Okay, so the Islanders only got 23 shots. Yeah, they had three power plays. I'd love to. I can't recover the amount of shots they got on the power play, but I posted the heat map for the 5-on-5 on the Facebook page as far as what Vanecek was facing. If you look closely, a lot, not many, but a lot, not all of them anyway, but a lot of those were high danger chances in front of him that he took care of. So, yes, it's only one game, but I can't say there's a goalie problem. If this is the effort, this is the result that, you know, can happen.
Right.
I'm sorry. I just don't see that there is a goalie problem. Now, the problem, if there is a quote unquote problem, it's consistency, but it's not just the guy with the pads and the mask. It's the five other guys in front of him.
Yes, exactly.
Two.
Exactly right. It's funny because even our Stanley Cup winning goalie, Braden Holtby, he had his off night too. So many nights we're saying, okay, Holt should have had that one. Like, what, you know, what was going on with that? And so many, many games that were like that. But in the end, and it was also funny because around about the end of January when they had the Hockey in Heels, at the time, my ex-wife and I, we went to the Hockey in Heels. I was the plus one. And it was interesting because of all the different events they had, and you got a chance to actually sit in a meeting and ask Barry Trotz questions. And I met the man like 8 or 9 times. I love the man. As a human being, one of the finest human beings I know. And then, you know, we're sitting there asking, what is going on with all this weird passing that you're doing? And he was explaining his strategy that year, which was designed specifically to outfox Mike Sullivan's Penguins, which worked. But he says the way they're passing is intended to confuse the goalie, and you take enough of those shots, like with the east-west passes that they're doing, eventually, lo and behold, it's in the net. And I thought, wait a minute, I didn't realize that's what you're doing. Then I start paying attention the next few games and said, oh, I get it. And even though the Caps look like, oh, man, not another one of these bad years, suddenly they start winning games. And remember the first two games against Columbus, you know, with Grubby. We're sitting there going, oh, here we go again, you know, playoffs over. And then suddenly Holt comes back with a new resolve, and, you know, then the history was made. But I just have to mention this. I'm sorry to interject it. But that goal by Cousy that beat the Penguins that year, of all the goals that I've seen in my lifetime, Guy Lafleur, you know, forcing overtime against Boston in 1979, you know, the Habs, every Stanley Cup they've ever won, even the Caps' own cup. No goal was as great as high as watching Cousy score that one goal. That for me is the top of the mountain in hockey in my lifetime. Anyway, I had to say that.
I don't think there's a Caps fan that would alive that would object to that. if I could tell my own quick. Story before that, probably as a Caps fan, of course, probably the number one playoff goal would have been Dale Hunter's Game 7 overtime winner, in 1988. But Cousy's goal in the 2018 division finals, that tops them all, gotta say.
Oh my goodness. I screamed so loud, I lost my voice for 3 days.
Yeah, I probably jumped off the couch and sprained something, if I remember right. All right. So, but I mean, everybody from the entire roster was committed that game, and this is what you get when all this talent and they come together and play like a team for 60 plus minutes and So, I mean, as long as that kind of effort is a bit more consistent, I don't think there's, too much to worry about. Every team has its problems, of course, but, you know, you see what they can do. So, moving on to the next, the final game in the series. Today's game, another afternoon game back home at good old Cap 1 against Bruce. There it is. Boudreaux's Canucks coming in for a visit. And I didn't think this would be an easy game. I thought the Caps had a good chance of winning.
Sure.
But I think you can summarize it by a couple things here. Bad timing on a couple of plays. A
couple of penalties.
A couple of moments of no discipline or severe lack of discipline.
Yeah.
And just like you said a few times already, Willem, the offense just died. Just went out of, you know, just went to nowhere. And between all of that, and yeah, I would say Samsonov probably out of one of the three goals, maybe one of them he'd like to have back. Now, I thought that the power play goal, Pettersson's power play goal, I looked at it the first time around. I thought, I said out loud, if he hugs the post, that doesn't go in. Well, if you look at the replay, he didn't have time to set himself. It was that quick. And Pettersson, to his credit, recognized, oh, you know what? I can do a bank shot before he gets set, before Samsonov had a chance to set himself against the post. Bang, it's in.
And that's how you beat elite goalies in the first place. And I do say Samsonov is elite quality. I believe that when I saw him play, and the same thing as Vanecek. So that was definitely an earned goal, one way or the other. Good goal. And like you pointed out, I mean, maybe one that he deserved, but what we deserved was a bit more on our side. How many times did we have a seeming breakaway? Hägglund breakaway, and it should have gone in. And the one that just kind of grinds my gears, too, that Ovi did. First of all, he skates into the zone and immediately skates away from the net. And then turns around, dude, skate to the net and take your shot. What are you doing? You know, that's what I screamed at the TV. And then the other time where, he's being generous, I suppose, but he passed the puck away. And I'm thinking, no, dude, shoot it. You're the best shot in the NHL. Shoot the puck. And I think I can make a T-shirt that says shoot the puck, because I say that so often. But those are some of the things. And after a while, with enough of the missed shots, it does get under players' skin. You start thinking, am I off tonight? Because people have good nights, they have bad nights. I mean, they're human beings like anyone else. And the psychology does enter into it in a big, big way. Mm-hmm. You know, when you got that swagger. I mean, here's the other thing that's been plaguing this team is when we go to overtime, we're almost certain that we're going to blow it, right? Because of what we've done in the past, and that affects us mentally. Big part of the Montreal Canadiens win in 1993 was when it went to overtime, we were almost sure we were going to win. And so many of those playoff games during the 93 run went to overtime that we won, and everybody was just scratching their head. They're astounded. How the heck can this, the little team that could, because Montreal had no business being in the playoffs that season anyway, but how is it that we won every overtime game? Now I'm looking at the overtime games of the Caps, and I'm seeing them do things like skating around in their own zone, or they have the puck and they figure skate around the opponent's net, and then they skate all the way back to their own zone. I'm going, why? No, what are you doing? you're assisting the other team. So, we've got to solve that overtime too.
Well, it's like I said before, they got to learn to want to win or try to win and not play to lose. And I think that, like you said,
no, they're not playing to lose. They're playing to not lose.
But right. Well, okay. That's what I meant.
They're not playing to win. They're playing to not lose.
Right. Right. Well, that's what I meant. But like you said, Willem, it is a mental thing that, gets buried in your unconscious after a while. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes habit, and then habit becomes action.
Yep.
And it's something they really, really need to nip in the bud. Now, Alan May said something, offered some sage advice, four mm-hmm. or five games ago, the last time they lost in overtime. Mm-hmm. Well, look, at least in the playoffs, they don't have to worry about 3-on-3 or the shootout. They play regularly, so maybe that will make the difference. But who knows?
Well, that is something to say about that, too. Three-on-three was just a way of getting rid of tie games, which was, I mean, I remember the days when things ended up in ties, and it was enormously frustrating. So, I mean, as much as people complain about the overtime three-on-three plus the shootout, I like it. It's a way of resolving games. And if it comes to the fact that you're in a shootout in the first place, you've got two evenly matched teams. But one of the other things that I'm thinking here, first of all, Peter Laviolette as a coach, I like him. I think he's in many ways as good or even better than Barry Trotz in terms of coaching our team. So I really like him. The fact that we're slumping right now, I can't be quite so pessimistic as I used to be, because I'm looking at it, I'm thinking maybe what he's doing is he's trying stuff out, because in the regular season, there is always the next game. And so long as we make the playoffs, it doesn't really matter where. And we shouldn't be concerned with president's trophies, because that really doesn't get you anything.
No.
So now is a really – this is the other thing that Barry Trotz said to me back in 2018 when I saw him. He says, we're doing experiments. If we lose the game, we do. If we win the game, we do. We're good enough that we're winning enough games that we're guaranteed a playoff spot, so that's good. You know, and he didn't quite say it that way. That's my interpretation of it. But I don't mind that Laviolette is experimenting with it. And in many ways also – The way we're scrabble tiling our players right now due to the COVID reasons is giving a lot of our junior players a lot of NHL experience. And come playoffs time, that might pay off in our favor. I'm looking forward to that. Plus, you know, the time to peak is March, April anyhow. So, I mean, as a fan watching the game, you like to see your guys win a few now and then. It's like, please. But on the whole, I'm not so pessimistic, because it's not like they blew us off the ice, you know, 27 to nothing. These were fairly close games. I mean, with the exception of the Boston game, that's fine. But I have a feeling that we're so close that I'm not too worried, to be honest with you. I think that we're going to get ourselves together, and when we have our full squad together, that we're going to be a formidable team. We're going to be a formidable opponent come playoff time. We also have to figure out what the other teams are and who our real opponents are. Are the Penguins as good as they used to be? Are they the same kind of threat they were? Or do we have to worry about the Flyers or the Rangers? The Rangers are peaking pretty hard. So that I'm looking to that, you know, if you know what I mean. And to be honest with you, I love what Laviolette has done with our club. You know, I have a lot of respect for the man.
Yeah, I think I was one of the ones who push for his hire when the vacancy mm-hmm. came, and because he's, you know, yeah, say all you want about hiring retread coaches, but you know, he's gotten results everywhere he's been. I thought he was the ideal coach for getting as much as can be gotten out of mm-hmm. a team that was aging, maybe had, if there was ever a window left, 1 or 2 years left in that. I thought he was the ideal hire. But the fact that he's been able to maintain what he's, you know, the results that he's gotten with such a fluid lineup also speaks volumes to his abilities as well. So, and Robbie Gross, I want to say again, Robbie Gross points this out all the time, and rightly so. The second year, everywhere he's been, the second year of Laviolette's term with every team he's been, the team he was with got pretty far into the playoffs. So
there you go.
I think as long as everything else comes together, I think, you know, we can, I don't want to say expect that, but maybe hopefully be, you know, bear witness to that.
Well, this is technically, you know, I think that good things are going to come our way. I really do. And I hope, I mean, for everybody across the board too, especially pandemic wise, but I'm with you there. I can see it. I can see the consistency that you pointed out as well. And it also speaks volumes, by the way, to how much I enjoy the group that we're in and the debate that we've had, because I was very much on a Mike Babcock side when it came to who we're going to hire, until I had further discussions with the different members of the group who pointed things out that I hadn't thought of or didn't know necessarily. And that actually persuaded me, and that landed me in the Laviolette camp in the end. So what I like is the open exchange of ideas that we've had among our group. You know, every now and then people get passionate and they get a little bit, you know, emphatic with their things. But most people, I don't think anybody's been really outright rude, you know, outside of one or two little incidents. But that's just humans interacting, you know what I mean? So, but on the whole, yeah, it was in discussions with our group where I changed my mind. I was originally a Babcock fan, and now I'm a, you know, now I'm on board with Laviolette.
No, that's good to know. And that, yeah, that's one of the reasons why I created this podcast was to, you know, provide an open forum, you know, with where, you know, hockey fans of all different backgrounds and experiences can discuss, you know, different ideas that they have without fear of, you know, being, you know, laughed at or, you know, teased or bullied even. You know, because what good, like we were talking about before we came on, what good does that get you? What's the purpose of that? Yeah. It's just, well, yeah, you know, this is a game we all love, and that's our commonality. And why can't we just, you know, leave it at that? So that's why I love having this forum. And, you know, I don't care if we end up with, you know, 50 listeners or 50,000 listeners, but I'm really glad that, you know, before, you know, we're getting to the end here, starting to run out of time, but before I forget, Willem, I'm really glad that you pointed that out and you shared your love and your passion and your knowledge, and you're here to share all of that, because, you know, that's probably one of the reasons I love this game is other fans and what they bring to the table. So before it slips my mind, I do want to thank you for that before we start to run out of time.
Sure.
So real quick, let me just put the lid on the week that was. So this game in particular, they had, okay, just to kind of put it, you know, wrap it up in a nice neat bow, they had chances to win this game. It wasn't as if they weren't trying, but they caught themselves in situations where, you know, maybe they lost a few battles that they shouldn't have. And maybe I don't want to say they weren't prepared, because I think they were, they did look fit enough. They did look ready for the game. I don't think Carlson not making it to the game because of COVID protocol, I don't think that really threw them off that much.
I don't think it did at all.
I'll give credit to him. I've said what I've said about him before. I'm not his biggest fan, of course, but, you know, I will give him some credit. He does do some things very, very well, but in the end, I don't think his absence was why they lost. I think it was just when it came down to the most crucial moments, Vancouver just, you know, came through at the right times. And, you know, case in point, they got four power play chances. They scored on two of them. Yes, our power play was 2-for-2 as well. Get down on your knees and praise whatever hockey god there is that caused that.
Blaine Forsythe wasn't in the arena.
You noticed that too.
I know, disrespect to the man, but we need new plans. We need to freshen it up, like Jenny said.
Oh yeah, definitely. It does. it gets very stale watching the same plays on the power play all the time.
And you saw you saw that they were trying new things. You know, Tom Wilson was a lot closer to the goal. Ovechkin was not sitting, although he's the first one he happened to score from the left circle, but he's a lot more fluid in his motion. He's crashing the net at times and then backing up and then making himself open. So they are trying, for the most part, it did work. And so they are trying some new things, but they need to keep that going, because they have gotten a little stale.
That's in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely.
That's
definitely
in the right direction, yeah.
Definitely.
I'm definitely on the board.
Yeah, and it wasn't as if they weren't into the game. The hits total will tell you that 27 for the Canucks, 25 for the Caps. So they were in sync there. 20 total block shots. So the effort is there. That says the effort was there. But it's just the Canucks came through at the right moments of the game. And this is probably one they can learn from. This would probably hopefully be one that the video coordinators kind of run through and say, okay, well, here's where we did this wrong and it cost us. And maybe this might end up being a key game where they learn from. Because Nemtsov ended up being the third star of the game. He was probably the best player out there, to be honest. I think he ended up losing most, if not all, of his faceoff. But other than that,
he sucked on faceoff today. He was only 27%.
Thank you, Jenny, on the spot.
That's so awesome.
But like I said, other than that, I think he had a pretty good game. Ovechkin, of course, had a decent game. He was all over the ice. But, you know, it's those little things, pardon me, in those key moments. And they just
Is what concerned me about Ovechkin today. While he had seven shots, he wasn't doing his physical play like he has been. I know there's some that concern about that upper body injury, which kind of makes me a little worried.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. But like I said, he didn't hit anybody. And they always play better when the captain's hitting, too.
Yeah, so, I noticed that.
Yes. Well, you know, there's also the bad penalties. You know, bad penalties have been a problem with us. I remember in the Adam Oates days when it was that bad, bad old days, and we took so many bad stick penalties and thinking, guys, that's really undisciplined. And then as soon as Trotz came in, those penalties all but disappeared. So, yeah, the guys have got to be a little bit more disciplined with that. And one of the ones was just, dude, why? So, I mean, against Boston, it was the same story. They're really terrible penalties. So, there's only so many – often that you can tempt fate before it bites you.
True enough. And not as bad this game, but there were a couple ones that absolutely killed them. And the more penalties you take, it just disrupts your flow just so badly. And I think that was part of it as well. But this was a game they could definitely have won, or at least, you know, pushed to overtime. So, like I said, I hope they take a lesson from this and learn that, you know, when it comes to certain moments of the game, there's things you do and things you don't do if you want to win. Yeah. So.
Totally on board. And shout out to Protas for saving a goal.
Absolutely. I think Protas is surprising me more and more each game. I think he's getting better each game. Yeah. And the one knock I have on him is I would like to see him use his size a little bit more to create room for himself. Other than that, he's not lighting up the scoreboard exactly, but I really don't have any complaints about his game other than that.
Yeah. I'm also a super fan of Daniel Sprong. Boy, has this guy been good for us or what?
I only have – there was that game against – I believe it was against Winnipeg a few weeks ago where he momentarily forgot to play defense and the captain called him out on it. But I think he's learned from that moment. And I also think he would be – as good as he is, he would be even better if he picked his shots a little bit more. I think, Jenny, you pointed out the semi-breakaway he had. What did he do wrong?
It wasn't a semi-breakaway. He was one-on-one. It was a breakaway. But, he needs to stop shooting on the ice. He needs to lift the puck a little bit because it was this game, and it had to have been the game against Boston. He had
another
breakaway
that.
Like that where he could – I can't remember if it was the Boston game or not because I don't remember. Shoots on the ice and it doesn't get the elevation that he needs. Two of those, like I said, the breakaway today and the game in whatever game it was, had he lifted the puck, he would have gone in.
This is all also practicing shootouts, which is another thing. Ovechkin himself has never been that great at the shootout. Whenever Trotsky would put him out there on the shootout, I'd say, oh, why him? You know, whereas we had guys like Kuzi and Backe and of course, Oshie, who it was almost a sure thing it would go in almost every single time. So, but that also speaks to breakaways. When you are one-on-one with the goalie, you know, it's a bit of a hit or a miss. But on the whole, I mean, Sprong has made his mistakes, but we're all human. On the whole, I really love what he's done for our team.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, he's got the speed. He's got the momentum. He's got the accuracy. Like I said, he's just got to not – I don't know if it's so much he gets in his own head sometimes or what. But, yeah, I mean, he has been really good for the team.
Yeah,
that is very, very true. Like what Jenny was saying as far as getting in his own head, no matter what you do, you know, what your specialty happens to be, sometimes when you start to overthink it too much, you can actually hinder your performance. I mean, even when I'm talking about playing songs with our band, a song that we've done correctly every single time, and suddenly we're focusing on little details and we just can't play it through the same way twice. So, yeah, sometimes you get in your own head, and that can really be a problem.
True enough, and I think that might have something to do with how he has sometimes – it looks like he has trouble picking his spots, but again, that – probably the one knock as of right now that I have on his game, but sure. Hopefully he'll work that out as the regular season goes along. Mm-hmm. And I would like to think he's also at the point where we can expect him to no longer be a healthy scratch unless he stops producing.
Right.
But yeah, that's been a topic of discussion before, but I think, as long as he at least gets his chances and is responsible enough in his own end, I don't think he has to worry about that.
Awesome. Anyway, that was just my little shout out because I really like the guy.
Yeah. Well, it probably doesn't hurt that he's Dutch, but
of course.
He's a guy that's bounced around with a few teams, including Pittsburgh and Anaheim, never really got a chance. You know, finally found something of a home here, and you know, given half the chance, you see what he can do. So hopefully, you know, he can continue to make the most of that. Because you know, I really like the guy too. I think when he's really on, he's just, you know, pedal to the metal towards the net, and it's just something I really love to see. I've said this before. There's no stopping him once he gets over that blue line and he's made up his mind to shoot it.
Speed like we haven't seen since Verona.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's the week that was on the ice. Previews of coming attractions. We've got three games coming up the rest of the week, starting with Winnipeg. The Jets coming to Cap 1. It's a 7 o'clock puck drop. That's Tuesday night, the 18th. And so I guess the cross-border ramifications have ended for now, since we've hosted Vancouver and now Winnipeg. So good to see. And then it's a quick trip up I-95 2 days later. Another game against Boston. Notice I said that right this time. 7 o'clock puck drop up there, and then turn around back home to host the Senators Saturday night. The 22nd, 7 o'clock puck drop there, and no games again until the last week or that next Monday. So we won't go into that. Kind of surprise there, and it'll involve something live, but I won't get into that until next week. Right. So that's the week that was, and three games. Two of them, at least, probably going to prove to be nice tests, pretty tough. So hopefully Caps can work out their latest issues in this kind of slump that they've been in and prove to finish out the week on the winning end of the ledger for this time around. Okay, so All right, so that's pretty much going to do it for this week. Willem, I want to thank you again for being on the show. Now, I don't want to let you go, though, without letting you know that you were a particular inspiration, you being a Montrealer. Well, I also came across a recipe for this online. So Jenny, this man that we're talking to is why I insisted that we have some poutine before the weekend is out, now that you got some time.
I figured.
Yum.
And so
I knew there had to have been a reason.
Yeah. And so I sent her out, and she went got some groceries, and I wanted to make sure it was actually authentic Montreal poutine.
Uh-huh.
She's got the cheese curds and
yep.
and the meat and the potato. She's even going to make the fries herself. And
oh, wow.
I promise that when this is all made, we'll post a picture of it. And we're definitely going to have your name on it. And I even went so far just to save a reminder. I even went so far as to save the video that you posted that where you did the song with your band.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. I wrote a song, put you in to the tune of cocaine.
the tune of Eric Clapton's cocaine.
Yeah.
Jenny, you will get a kick out of this. His lyrics on this are just hilarious.
It's French Canadian junk food. Let's put it that way. It's typically made with a savory beef gravy, like a brown gravy, but you can vary that, right? Look, it's designed to be put together by a 13-year-old in a French fry stand at the side of the road. So this is not, this is not Robert Irvine cuisine, if you know what I mean. Or, the curds are just cheddar cheese just before they press it into the mold. So it's cheddar cheese, thanks, soft and melty. They sell it at Target, and there are lots of places where you can get them these days, and I just adore it. And of course, that Captain Obvious, I still owe him a poutine. I have a can of poutine sauce from Montreal. Poutine sauce is just brown gravy. That's all it is. I'm not a poutine snob. Like, you talk to somebody with barbecue around here, and some people take it real serious. Like, oh, no, it's not North Carolina, South Carolina, what part? Okay, I understand that some people take it real serious.
Yeah, but essentially, people do take their barbecue very serious.
It's just French fry gravy and cheese. That's it. And you mix it all up, and the whole appeal to a person like me is all the ooey gooey mess that it makes, because you put when you're putting the fries in the bowl, you put the cheese in there with it too, and then you pour hot gravy over it, and it gets all melty. And men are very particular when it comes to melted cheese. So it's junk food, but it's delicious junk food. And just as a matter of distraction, a big joke for me, it's taken on the life of bacon for some people, like it cures all ills and what have you. These days, I spend a lot of my time trying everything I do on my Facebook page is I'm trying to encourage people and spread a little bit of cheer and happiness. But there's enough negativity in the world. This is why I love hockey, because I get to cheer for something that's relatively benign. We're just enjoying a sport, having a good time doing it. Same thing with poutine. It's junk food, but it's fun. It's part of the enjoyment of life. And the best thing of it all, and that's why thank you for inviting me on your show, is just enjoying talking about something I love with people who also love it. And every now and then I might change my mind. My opinions are my own. I'm not saying that I'm the great be-all and end-all of knowledge. Sometimes I'm right, I'm wrong, whatever. It's just that's what it is to be alive and enjoy the sport that we do. Poutine is the same thing. It's just delicious. And I call it delicious just because that's where I'm from, right? I'm from Montreal, so that's the big thing. And half the Montreal is, oh, that's not good food. It's, oh, you have to have your kale. And I'm thinking, no. I mean, left to your own devices and you want some comfort food, what do you do? So that's why the line goes, we all like, but we don't admit it. Because half the time I raise my eyebrows at people who say they don't like poutine and thinking, yeah, sure. You're just saying that to look correct among your friends. So either way, I hope people try it and like it. because it's just sharing a little bit of myself.
Well, I'm a fan of hockey lore. I'm something of an amateur hockey historian myself.
Oh.
And of course, one of the story franchises we've already discussed, of course, the Montreal Canadiens. Early on, when I became a hockey fan and studied all the teams in the history, I found out that was one of the popular dishes that they actually served at the games, starting at the old Montreal Forum. And ever since I learned about that, I became fascinated by it, and I've always wanted to try it. And now that I'm in a position where I have somebody that I'm married to that knows her way around the kitchen very well.
Uh-huh.
So.
Well, you're going to have a guest soon, too, if you're making poutine. I'm just teasing. I am serious, though. One of these days, I would like to get together, like a watch party or what have you, and get together with some of the members of this group, because there's some really good people there.
And
I really enjoy it.
Absolutely. That's my goal. That's my goal eventually. So
Robbie's one of the people I've been talking to. I like the guy. I want to meet the guy, you know. And Doug Lucerian and so on. There's all these people that I really enjoy hearing from. So, it's part of the enjoyment of life. And you know, thanks for having me on your show. And that we've been talking for so long about such fun things.
Yeah, well, that's one of the highest compliments I can get, and I do appreciate hearing that. And that's one of the reasons why I do this. I love getting together with fellow Caps fans. Doesn't matter what their background is, but I can't say enough how much I've enjoyed talking to you and having you on. Like so many other fellow fans, you've got your own perspective being from Montreal, and I absolutely love that. And I can definitely say with absolute certainty, we are definitely going to have we got to have you back on, because this has been a joy.
You.
This has been an absolute joy.
I certainly appreciate it. One last little anecdote, if I may, just to show you how moved the Caps, for me to really fall in love with the team.
Absolutely.
Being from Montreal, the greatest rivalry in hockey that I've had, the hottest, most hateful rivalry, is between Montreal and the Quebec Nordiques at the time.
More
heated rivalry. Take Montreal, Toronto, ramp that up. Take Washington, Dallas in football, and even take Washington versus the Penguins, and just add orders of magnitude to that. You have heat between Montreal,
Willem,
and Quebec.
You do not have to sell me on it. I actually watched some of those playoff series.
Yeah.
I remember the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Battle of Quebec. I remember all of it. You do not have to sell me on it. I saw it all in the '80s, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, as you know, and in fact, this is actually what brought one of my friends in Montreal to be a Washington fan. One of the key players, one of the key pain points of the Montreal Canadiens in the early 80s was Dale Hunter. In the 1982 playoffs, when Rick Walmsley was our goalie, one of the most heartbreaking losses, and you see it when Dale Hunter scored the winning goal that knocked us out of the playoffs that year, and you see Walmsley he's just sitting up in his net, just completely dejected. So much so that the players came up to him and said, "Dude, we're sorry, man. It's not your fault. Cheer up." But on that game, and ever since then, Montreal would call him Le Petit Peste, because the way people talk about Brad Marchand, but even more so this. The guy always seemed to have our number, no matter what. And even though his brother Mark was on our team. So, Montrealers were pretty much conditioned to hate Dale Hunter. It's a strong word, but I'm saying it in hockey terms, right? And so come down here, he got traded to the Caps, which is what brought my friend to the Caps fold way back then, even. But then when he was here, and he was the head coach after Bruce left, and I'm thinking, Dale Hunter, how can I like the Caps when Dale Hunter is here? Him. And I will tell you something. Watching the guy coach us that year and also watching Holtby in his early years, I'm thinking, wait a minute. When I see Braden Holtby, I see Steve Penny in his early years, like the 1984 playoffs for Montreal, Steve Penny. Oh my God, Montreal was like overjoyed that year. But when I see that, and I saw Holtby, I'm thinking, man, I'm looking at a star goalie. I knew way back then he was a superstar, just watching him play. And then Dale Hunter, and the fact that he didn't want to coach us any further, I was a little heartbroken because I'm going, man, I learned to respect the man. And then the more, I mean, there's a fellow named Tom Starkey who wrote a book, the Red Rising, all about the new cap since like 2000, the whole rebuilding of the team and everything.
Ted Starkey.
And I'm begging, please write the next book. I'll buy it. I'll buy the first one off the line. But I really learned to respect Dale Hunter from that. So that's the kind of thing. You know, I'm not so dyed in the wool in my views, except for the two prejudices I alluded to earlier. That's one thing for sure. I learned to really respect the man. That's how much I learned to love the Caps. What an organization, what a great team. And I'm glad I'm among the fans.
Well, we're certainly glad that you're with us and, with our little podcast group and, certainly part of the Caps fans. And I feel like I'm all the better for knowing you. And so thanks once again. You're welcome. Thanks once again for coming on the show and spending time with us. And like I said, we're definitely going to have you on again to share your observations. So we've gone quite a bit over time here, but you know what? It was worth every minute. So we're going to wrap it up for this week. We'll follow up with next week's episode to cover the three games I mentioned. So on behalf of Willem Backus and the seamstress for the band, my wife, Mrs. Blue Liner, suddenly lost the ability to talk after an hour. This is the Blue Liner on Point signing off and reminding you that if a Viking is reincarnated, technically, he's Bjorn again.
I love it.
Hallelujah, and let's go Caps.
Go Caps!
Go Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast. Thanks for listening.